Blog Talk Radio.
Near Civil War history, my heart could they be? She was standing in fiction, stretched high on bare feet. Love in the library, quiet and cool. Love in the library, there are no rules. Surrounded by stories surreal and sublime, I fell in love in the library once upon a time.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Webweaver Books, where our favorite authors read their books for you, and clothing is 100% optional. I'm your host, CK Webb. I am super stoked to get today's guest onto the show, you guys. It's been a real long time, but I'm super excited to get Mark T. Sadler on the show. So if you guys would, let's go ahead and get Amazon pulled up. And I would love for you guys to pull up the title of the book that I've been oohing and aahing over all week. You guys have heard me every show that we've had be talking about the title of this book. We finally get to hit it. Kettle of Vultures. I will love it. It is an absolutely immaculate title, so I can't wait to get to it. Let's drop a couple of advertisements real quick, you guys. I want to say a huge thank you to all the publishers and publicists that we work with here at Webweaver Books. Thank you guys so much. I mean, seriously, you guys really made my job look like I'm really on my game. And I just want the authors to know that sometimes I'm totally not. And you guys always are. So thank you for everything that you do. Chase Enterprises Publishing, Redidette Publishing, Wigu Press, W-I-G-U Press. That's When I Grow Up Press. Great kids books. You guys check them out. Also, Outskirts Press, Down and Out Books, Ravenswood Publishing, and that's an imprint of GMTA. You guys check them out. They have some really cool blog tours and a really cool way of doing it also. And I want to say thank you to the publicists as well, Boston Communications. Thank you guys so much. Wow. And I'm answering all your emails right now. Also, Warwick Associates out of California. Thank you guys so much for sending such absolutely cool guests to the show. You guys go check out that that stable of clients they have there at Warwick Associates out of California. Really, really, really cool. Also want to say a huge, giant, you've been with us longer than anybody kind of thank you to MZPR, that's Merrill Zegarick Public Relations. Merrill's been with us longer than anybody, so thank you, Merrill. I appreciate you guys so much. Also, Merrill L. Moss Media Relations, AuthorWrite.com. You know, that's where a few of our warm, buttery, delicious accents from across the pond come from. You guys are quite fond of those, so that's where those are. And also, I want to say a huge thank you to Book Savvy PR. I do a good bit with those guys. And Sage's Blog Tours, guys. If you haven't checked out Sage's Blog Tours, you should go check them out. She is a very, very staunch advocate for the clients that she has. And she's setting up some pretty cool blog tours on the books that she's doing. So go check her out. It's sageblogtours.com. And Book Savvy PR, you guys can Google that. I didn't have a chance to get the website down. I'll have it for you tomorrow for sure. So go check those people out. Those are people, a few of the people we deal with on a regular. And, man, do they make my job so much easier than it never is. So thank you guys for everything. I want to go ahead and let's go ahead and get our guest on the show. I'm real excited to get him on. Hey, how's it going, Mark?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Long time no. Well, I haven't heard from you. I know that you've been busy, and we see now why Kettle of Vultures. Before we jump on the book, for somebody who maybe was living under a rock, I don't know. Tell us about you, Mark. How you got started writing?
Well, you're talking about the people from across the pond. Well, I'm one of those. I just happen to live in Arizona. I've been in the country here in America now since 1974, and the last 20 odd years out here in Arizona. So, hence the Kettle of Vultures title. It's a catchy Arizona crime thriller. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I saw the title. I was like, and I've been talking about it seriously, literally, like since we got you nailed down for a date. I'm just every show where I'm like, bring it up. I'm like, guys, it's a great title. And this, and I tell people that's like a third of the battle. The book cover, then your title. That's after you've written things. Those things seem like they're really, really easy. They're not. Those are some of the hardest parts of the book writing process, is figuring out what you're going to put on that cover and not be literal about it, which we authors are notorious for doing, and then coming up with a wicked cool, you know, title that nobody else has and that, you know, that's really going to catch people's eye. And that's exactly what you did with this. So I love this. Tell me about Kettle of Vultures. It's a Nate is it Duarte? What is that? Duarte? Am
Nate,
I saying that
Nate, right? Nate Duarte, yeah.
Awesome.
To begin with, just for people that don't know, a kettle of vultures is actually when you see vultures circling in the sky. Obviously, that means there's something dead or dying, and since we're in the desert, it's out there. So that's a sign that there's some kind of a problem to be resolved. So that's where the title itself comes from.
Right.
As far as Nate Duarte is concerned, we meet him as a 31-year-old detective. He became a police officer because the same bad guy, by the time he was 8 years old, had killed both his parents. And so seeking justice for their murder, he becomes a police officer to catch up with him, catch up with the bad guy, who is, by the time we meet Nate, has also become an adult and is now head of the Sonoran cartel.
Very cool. Now, let me ask you, are you there? I'm sorry, I lost
you
for a second. Okay. Very, very cool. I love that. And see, I got to learn something because I've actually heard that expression before, but I wasn't sure if that's what it was. It's kind of what it looks like in the sky. You know, when you see it, we don't have, we have buzzards here. So vultures are much bigger than that. I wish we had vultures here. They're really, really cool. I don't get to see them here. But they are very, very big. And they used to be the one thing. I had a crow once. And so I said, you know, they had really big brains. And if you got a hold of them, maybe, you know, you could make them a little smarter than what they appear to be. And so I know it sounds crazy, but I wanted one. I know it sounds crazy. I know they're disgusting animals, but they're really got big brain capacity. So thank you for clearing up that kettle of vultures thing. But I still love this. This is just an immaculate title. And I'm just drawing it just instantly. I'm like, what's happening with this book? So the direction that it's going in. Now I want to ask you this, and this is just for my own inquisitiveness. This is kind of hitting on like the U.S.-Mexico border, you know, deal. Is that,
right.
Was that purposely done, or, you know, did it just happen to be that it just happens to be a hot topic right now, or it's something that you're used to dealing with because you're, you know, in Arizona?
Well, a little bit of all of that. I'm always curious about why people come to America. Obviously, I came, and it was back in the 1970s. I came over as a student, and, of course, when you're living in Arizona, you hear a lot about people who come over illegally, and there's also political refugees. And this particular book, the mother of Nate Duarte, was a political refugee from El Salvador in the 1970s. She still came through illegally. And it's all based on historical fact. Back in the early 70s, there were a lot of political refugees coming in from El Salvador. The Catholic Church was actually, through the different nuns in Arizona, was smuggling them all over the country. And so I used that as a base to go from. It was kind of curious, the name Nate Duarte. I wanted a good detective-sounding name, and obviously I think it's a good, strong name. But I wasn't sure where the word Duarte come from. And I knew it sounded Spanish, but not necessarily Mexican. And most people that live in Tucson, I'm Mexican when they're Hispanic. But Duarte, when I looked it up, was El Salvadorian. And I picked a name just not knowing at the time when I did that.
That it was totally appropriate.
Well, in the 1970s, the president of El Salvador was President Duarte.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious? How cool is that? So that's like deep-seated subliminal stuff going on right there. I know. It's some crazy show going on in the author's head. You guys better be careful. Don't try to get in there. I tell Shrinks you stay out of there because once you go in, you're going to be trapped for life. Well, that is really, really cool. And, you know, I mean, it goes to that, you know, we're always taking notes, even when we don't know we're taking notes, you guys. I'm serious. You know, I tell people all the time, be careful what you say, because you could end up in my next novel. And that's a true story, because it happens all the time.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, it does. Well, look, I know that you have a really great reading picked out for the listener. So I'm ready to pipe down. I want to hear some Kettle of Vultures. So I'm going to pipe down, open the floor up for you, Mark. Whenever you're ready, you can sit up and jump right into your reading, okay?
Yeah. All righty. I'm going to start off with the prologue and the first couple of chapters. Kind of timed myself the other day for about 20 minutes, so let's see how we go here. I don't speak any Spanish at all, and there's actually some Spanish in the book, so for those of you who speak Spanish, if I absolutely slaughter the word.
It's okay. Come on, I don't either. That's about as good as I can get for you, so we're good. I got to get cuss words, so we won't go there. You know, I mean, of course I have cuss words. I was in the Navy. What do you want from me? But anyway.
Oh, but
I'm fine.
All right. Well, I'll give you a little taste of Kettle of Vultures then. The prologue starts in March of 1972. As the flames consumed the city, Consuela felt her whole world was burning. Embers flickered and glowed in the night, illuminating the valley behind her. The emergency sirens had long since ceased wailing, and the bombing in San Salvador appeared to have come to an end. The air was hard to breathe, filled with drifting smoke and fumes. Ash fell like errant gray snowflakes, and the stench of damp, scorched wood carried on the wind. Fires glowed halfway up El Picacho, the mountain looming over the valley, looking as if hot lava poured down its side for the first time since 1917. Crouched in the shadows of a well-trimmed hedgerow, the city far below her, Consuela Duarte watched from across the street as a black Buick pulled up in front of the home of the Venezuelan diplomat Gonzalo Espina. Napo had described the house to her so she'd recognize it. Five shapely poplars stood at attention behind the wrought iron fence. A gleaming brass nameplate on the brick gatepost glinted under the yellowing light from the street lamps. Three men poured out of the car. Barely discernible in the fading light, they ran up the steps of the stately home and pounded on the front doors. A fourth, the driver, stayed behind the wheel of the vehicle, watching. When the house doors opened, one of the men yelled, "Policia!" They burst in, pushing past the white-jacketed servant at the entrance. Although she could not hear what they said, voices were raised in anger. She watched as a figure dressed in gown and pajamas was dragged from the residence and pushed down the steps. The man collapsed in a heap on the ground, wrists handcuffed behind his back. The black-clad police officers kicked at his prone body and rained down several blows on him from their rifle butts. They bent to pick him up and drag him into the car. The driver met them and opened the passenger door. The other officers tossed the unconscious figure into the back seat. Through the misty rain that glistened in her hair and dripped from her eyelashes and earlobes, Consuela saw the man's face illuminated in the lamplight. She brought her hand to her mouth to stop a loud gasp from escaping. The face creased in pain, the dark curls draped over the forehead belonged to her cousin, Napo. They pushed him onto the floorboards of the car, and she watched helplessly as they drove away. Cousin Napo, or Jose Napoleon Duarte, head of the UNO, an El Salvadorian political party, had sent word to her earlier in the afternoon to meet him at the home of their friend, Gonzalo Espina. The results of yesterday's general election were finally being reported after the government had suppressed all radio broadcasts of the vote count. Colonel Arturio Armando Molina, the hand-picked successor in the opposition party, the PCN, had been declared the winner. Duarte and his party officials suspected the vote had been rigged. Although the military backed the PCN, there was enough disgruntled army officers to lead a coup d'etat against Molina. Their leader, Colonel Benjamin Meja, had approached Duarte. After spending several hours in Meja's office, Duarte had made a national radio broadcast announcement asking his followers to side with his rebels. As the news of Duarte's intent filtered back to the government, troops were ordered to begin harassing and, where necessary, arresting his family and followers. Opposing forces rampaged through the streets, leaving the city pockmarked with bullet holes, shells scattered under the citizens' feet throughout the cobblestone streets. Fire left a scorched scar throughout the government buildings downtown. Once the broadcast hit the airwaves, Duarte had secretly taken refuge at the home of his friend, Ambassador Espina, and sent for her. Duarte trusted Consuela, his second cousin, as well as his personal secretary. "Molina's secret police will be watching, so be careful," he said on the phone. "Be sure you are not being followed. A dust coming around to the back of the house. I'll leave the gate unlatched. The staff will be expecting you." Napo's wife, Maria, and their children had already been flown to Venezuela. Too late for him to get away. Now too late for Consuela to help him. Shivering against the February evening chill, she looked upon his monogrammed handkerchief laying in the street, wilting in the evening's drizzle, and realized that she would soon have to leave El Salvador too, or she'd be taking up space in a jail cell before the police finished with tonight's raids. It was probable her name would be on a list too. She needed to flee, cross borders into Guatemala. She had friends in Chilantenango who would help her into Mexico and up into Arizona. In America, she'd be able to stop running. She'd heard people there protected political refugees. She pulled her coat's collar close against the chill damp as she turned from the ambassador's home and drifted, smoke-like in the night, back down the street in San Salvador. Staying in the shadows, she flitted like a moth from lamp to lamp, down cobbled streets to her terracotta-tiled adobe home with the fragrant wisteria that clung to the wooden trellis around the front door. Her emergency bag had been packed for this eventuality. Sliding the bed frame away from the wall to retrieve the suitcase, she pried up the loose floorboard where she had stashed her passport, getaway cash, and state identification. With no time to consider where she would have to leave behind, she struck out on her escape, where her ride waited patiently. Chapter 1. I brushed the scorpion off the toe of my boot and crushed it into the sand. Sweat dripped from my face as the early afternoon Arizona sun showed no mercy. I bumped against the Crown Vic while Kramer and Oro Volleycop knelt in my shadows, pouring over the hood. Kramer leaned in and whispered, "Hey, you know how I know it's a crime scene?" I cocked a questioning eyebrow. "Look." He flicked a large red ant off his pants leg and pointed. "Over there, behind the bikes. Ain't that a crushed Bud Light can?" I shook my head with a chuckle. "Spend any time with the Pima County Sheriff's Department and you'll know their unofficial motto. It's not a crime scene unless it's a Bud Light." And sure enough, I saw a crumpled can, the sun reflecting off it. It must have been tossed from the trailer recently, otherwise it would have been bleached from spending weeks out in this unrelenting sun. 15 of us now crouched in the sand waiting. 9mm trained on the trailer, waiting for the primary negotiator to arrive and hoping to avoid the tarantulas, scorpions, or sidewinders that inhabit the brush scrub around the grubby trailer court. SWAT Commander Davidson had held a conference back at the Pima County Sheriff's substation on the highway. "We have this one, James Love, better known as Shiloh, along with several of his compadres from the Heathens Motorcycle Club, held up in a trailer park about halfway mile west." He handed around a blown-up photo. Bandana, greasy-looking beard, retreating belly under a black T-shirt and leather vest. "It appears Mr. Love decided to celebrate his release from county lockup yesterday with a party featuring Metallica and one of the trailer park's other occupants, Raul Lopez, unable to sleep to get ready for the graveyard shift at the Ozarko plant, called in Deputy Swain here." He pointed to a uniformed Pima County sheriff to his right. "He found a shotgun muzzle pointed at him." I'd been one of the first four to show up, sent out in the initial deployment and staked out the place. Recognizing which lot they were at proved easy. The three hogs sitting outside the ramshackle trailer was a giveaway. Bosses wanted this takedown to be handled by the entire crew, so we waited. Not a sound emanated from inside the trailer. None of us saw even the hint of a curtain move for a couple of hours, not even the sharpshooters positioned our back. I'd learned about 3 points, the southwestern suburb of Tucson, when I joined SWAT years ago. The newspapers reported a grimy, inhospitable hiding place for those with a grudge, a spot-on diagnosis. Single white trailers and wrecked school buses, rusted-out cars, little sanitation, vacant faces. Meth and incest were rampant, according to the deputies who came into this sparsely populated community. It was also the breeding ground for one of the most despicable characters my partner Hector and I had ever put away, Charlie Ficus. He was removed from the area as a youth and was spending time in a juvenile facility by the time we ran into him. Sitting out here brought back a flood of memories of that depraved character. Commander Davidson stopped by each cluster of dusty figures watching the trailer, interrupted my thoughts. "The primary negotiator's on his way. Got tied up giving evidence as an expert witness. We'll wait till he gets here." "Oh, it's okay, Sarge. It's not going to get any hotter weather-wise, at least," I said. "So, what, best 30 minutes then?" Davidson nodded. "Yeah, I guess so." He patted my shoulder. "Hang in there." He headed out to address each of us in similar fashion. By the time the sheriff's negotiator, Peter Reed, arrived on scene and dusk started to set in, we sensed movement in the trailer. A single light from what we assumed to be a bedroom popped on a few minutes ago. Grabbing the loudspeaker, Reed got their attention. By shouting through the window's screen mesh, he agreed to make arrangements to exchange guns for Peter. Even meth head bikers get hungry and we wanted them disarmed. We'd wait him out or starve him out if this goodwill gesture didn't garner results. The 10-pound ceramic plates in the body armor we wore felt like twice the weight, but with the sun now going down, they provided the body warmth we would need during the night. Desert nights can turn chilly even though after roaring hot temperatures during the day. A nervous-looking Domino's delivery driver arrived on scene, escorted by a deputy, and we engaged the trailer again. The smell of those pizzas made my stomach growl. We stood our ground out here all day with nothing more substantial than water and a crunchy granola bar. When they threw out a submachine pistol, a shotgun, and a couple of revolvers, we placed 3 pizza boxes on the steps of the trailer's entrance. The door opened the width of a hand, and they slid the boxes in one at a time. They weren't taking any chances, and nor were we. As the sun set, the spotlights that were placed in strategic areas around the trailer earlier in the afternoon were switched on. They were designed to keep the trailer in full light during the night hours. It worked better than having the sheriff bring in a helicopter with a spotlight. That would have been too noisy. The movement of the chopper blades would have stirred up the dust which already coated us, getting in our skins, crevices, nostrils, and mouth. Before long, a narrow, high-smoked glass window in the bathroom area slid open. All eyes were trained ready for anything. Instead of a rifle barrel, however, a pair of feet protruded followed by long legs until a plaid-clad female inched out and plopped to the ground, falling on her ass with a crash. Blonde hair cascaded around her shoulders, swinging in front of her face, wild-eyed in the light, strained on the trailer, scared out of her mind. She raised her hands and ran toward the nearest squad car, one less to worry about tonight. An EMT wrapped her in a blanket and led her away out of sight into a waiting ambulance. We watched the trailer and waited. A brake and rake stood ready in case we needed to smash a window in order to toss in a flashbang. No one liked the idea of fire and a potential meth lab together, so we waited patiently. "Charlene, get your ass out here!" a gruff voice yelled from inside the trailer, and we heard the door slam, followed by the loud voice, "God damn it!" Realization dawned on Genius, his baby girl, had squirmed out of the window under the pretext of taking a pee. The front door opened wide, illuminating the interior, and a short, fat man holding a shotgun hollered, "Charlene, get the hell back in here!" When he realized she was in our custody, he leveled the shotgun and blew the lights off the Crown Vic I'd been taking cover behind all day. That's where we all opened fire at once. 40mm M16 and 870 Remington, as well as other handguns. Rounds smacked into the trailer, and the fat man fell backwards. Simultaneously, the explosion lifted the trailer off its blocks, blowing the windows out, the fire spreading throughout the structure. The debris knocked the Harleys over like dominoes. I looked at Kramer, and we both said at the same time, "Meth lab." The fire department, with an engine in close proximity, started to work on the blaze. The team members positioned behind the trailer let out a skinny man wearing nothing but a pair of blue jeans and handcuffs. His eyebrows were singed off his face. One of them managed to make it out of the trailer alive. We shucked the body armor, tossed it into the trunk. Kramer drove me to the sheriff's depot. And after a quick liaison with the powers that be on site and a visit to the head, I headed back east, stopped again at Ryan Field Airport Restaurant for coffee and eggs, trying to unwind before heading back into Tucson. Nothing like breakfast at midnight. The place looked desolate at this hour. The adrenaline rush brought on by the sudden conclusion after a day of anticipation was still with me, and the dusty rose-colored Porsche responded to my heavy foot as I cruised north on I-10 until the exit to Ina Road. I had no idea that a year later I would cross paths with Charlie Ficus and his old stomping grounds one final time. Chapter 2, June 17th, 2006. The acrid smell of urine hitting bleach stung my nostrils, and I reached over and flushed midstream. She'd been cleaning again, like half a bottle of Clorox would make the porcelain any whiter. I headed back into the kitchen, avoiding the bedroom. She'd be in the middle of the routine I knew so well. I'd be in her way. Glancing back to be sure she didn't see, I placed the three long strands of wavy red hair I'd removed from her hairbrush into the white envelope I'd brought for that purpose. Folding the envelope, I slid it into my shorts, back sparkling water from the refrigerator, and settled onto the sofa. I slipped off my huaraches, placed my feet on the coffee table, and pulled the newspaper into my lap. The Arizona Daily Star Sunday edition, thick with ads. I slapped those inserts down on top of her slut magazines. You know, those glossy Hollywood starlet gossip rags. They all slid off the table into a pile on the floor. I let all the periodicals lay in a heap on the waxy Sortio tiles. As the oscillating fan in the corner turned, it blew up the corners of the pages with a faint whir. After reading with disgust the sports summary on the USA's 1-1 tie with Italy at the World Cup in Germany, I paged through the international news section looking for what I really wanted. Found one more little tidbit for my growing file on the head of the Sonoran cartel, Ramon Adolfo de la Garza Sanchez, or, as he became referred to by the press, El Perro Guapo. The brief report indicated his daughter Beatrice taken to hospital after being wounded by an errant bullet during an attack on their home during a quinceanera. A rival cartel, the Sinaloa, walked in and shot up the party, infiltrating the party disguised as the band played hired to play the band of Sinaloese music. When the brass instruments played the first notes from the horn, it sounded like sheep or goats bleating. That's Cueno de Chivo, but in reality it was an AK-47 firing on the unsuspecting group gathered in the courtyard to celebrate. Half the band members were cut down in the gun battle, but the attack on Sanchez's life proved to be unsuccessful. Cocaine cowboys. Now at least I could confirm where his home sat, outside Nogales, where I'd suspected all along, hidden in plain sight. Page in half, I ran the side of my thumbnail across the paper until it creased as sharp as my uniform pants hanging in my closet, and I slipped into my shirt's breast pocket as I heard the bedroom door open. I looked up and smiled. The scent arrived across the room before she did, and I sneezed. Esmeralda's perfume always got to me. Allergic, I guess. Sorry, mijo. You know I need to smell sweet for the boys. She ruffled my hair. It's going to be a long night. I plopped the newspaper back on the table. Yeah, I know. And will you stop cleaning around here? You know Gabby comes in during the week. You should be resting, you know. She laughed. I can't enjoy my soak in the tub if I don't clean the bathroom after you, nasty smelly man. And pick up my magazines, will you? Won't you leave them lying on the floor? She bent over to grab them, her long red nails scratching on the paper, and flashed me. The stilettos taller than her skirt was long. That wasn't hard to do. Not even a thong, I said, aghast, turning my head. She'd become more brazen with me recently, which needed to stop if what I suspected showed to be correct. Easy in, easy out. It's better for business, she said with a shrug. Her infectious grin made me shake my head. Dark red hair, piled up in ringlets, and mascara brushed on thick as if she wore a black tiara on each eye. The paint covered up the lines on her face, but even so, time had been kind to her. Her arms were sleeved in pastel tattoos. A cartoon hula dancer extended down from her left shoulder, and a butterfly festooned her forearm, while the other arm's skull celebrated Dilemus Huertas. You look stunning, Esme, darling. Where will you be working tonight? Downtown? Yeah, Hotel Arizona. Thought I'd stay close in case I need to get back here in a hurry. I'm not going to be here, babe. I'm heading home to get some real shut-eye as soon as you get out of here. Not normal for me to drop in over the weekend. You paid me, so I stopped by just for you. It's been 3 weeks since I saw you last. You weren't in jail, I checked. Glad to see you still in one piece. She pouted. But what if I get busted? Oh, Vice ain't working downtown tonight. To park your van on Congress. Try not to be too obvious, though. Keep an eye out for the black and whites. Can't stop them from cruising. Esmeralda's usual gig on the weekends was hitting the Saguaro Lounge in the lobby of the Hotel Arizona. On a busy summer season with one convention or another in town, crowds gathered in the hotel lobby bar to watch the NBA championships, wondering if the Heat would beat out the Mavs. Sporting events were always good for hustling. A safe group to hit on and lure out to her van on pretext of lighting a cigarette. Actions speak louder than words. Recent city regulations turned Tucson's restaurants and bars into non-smoking establishments, so her meaning became obvious to the undiscerning eye. 10 minutes later, they'd be back at the bar while she applied a new layer of red gloss to those bee-stung lips and asking another patron for a light. She could go through a pack of Marlboros a night if the crowd felt right. I sat and watched her one night just to be sure she operated safely. Surreal. Standing, I asked, so you got your protection? Reaching into both sides of the ample cleavage that threatened to tumble out of her white peasant-style blouse, she produced condoms from the right and mace from the left. My shoulders shook in silent laughter. Okay, but you watch out for yourself, all right? I gave her a quick hug, crossed the room, and at the front door stopped with my hand on the doorknob and turned back to her. See you Wednesday? I'll be fine. Be careful driving, detective. So there's a touch of Kettle of Vultures for you.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Condoms and money. She's getting everything going. I mean, I love it when a guy says, at least you have protection. And both of those things are protection, but one's so much different from the other. Anyways, but so very important. It's equally as important as the other one, I really believe. Maybe more so, probably more so. But anyways, really, really great, phenomenal, and I see, you know, while you're reading, and I'm doing my thing, you know, I'm stalking you and your reviews and all that stuff. You've got some phenomenal reviews coming in already. What are readers saying to you personally, Mark? Because these reviews are immaculate. You have got straight 5 stars. That's all you got right now on 8, and this book's only been out like a week or something. So what are they saying to you?
Everyone just really loves the book. Since it's the first one in a trilogy, I mean, people are already demanding the second book, and I'm nowhere close to getting that one finished yet. But you know, like any other book, they want to see a movie, so you know, it's a good action picture, and no one seems to be turned away by the gory side, which this particular
right.
book does have. Not to get into any great detail, but he turns Fargo with the wood chipper and the pigs.
Oh, why? Yeah, that's right. I know what I'm reading today. I don't know if you guys already know, but there are certain people that know exactly what to say. And Mark, you always do. I love that. I gotta go see. I gotta go. Okay, all right. I can't get the grin off my face now. I'm like, oh gosh, I love you for that. That is, because I'm always looking for new ways to kill people. That's what I do. I literally will call DJ at like 11 o'clock at night and be like, how about exsanguinating a body and blah 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 blah, right? And she'll be like, what?
Sure.
Where did this come from? I don't know. It just popped up in my head. Now you got me thinking about wood chippers and stuff. Now I'm just like, I gotta go kill something. This is amazing. I'm sorry, you guys, not kill something literally, but I like to keep you guys guessing and on your toes. Oh, wow, we're totally out of time. I really wish we had more time to talk on this novel. Wow, it sounds amazing. It really does. Kettle of Vultures, it makes perfect sense. Everything is falls into place. I do want to ask you about your book cover because I do think it's absolutely perfect, perfect coloring and shading, and it will draw your eye from way, way away. Tell me about the color. Tell me a little bit about the cover.
Well, the actual mountain on here is a small mountain out here in the Tucson area, and someone had printed a picture of it on Facebook that they'd taken. So I contacted them. Said, "Heck, I really need to use this." They said, "Go use it." And then I have a friend of mine that does some book designs here in town. In fact, Mr. Anderson Atlas, whose review is on the back cover, look up his website. He's the one that does all the
website, Addy. I don't have no problem with you guys pimping your cover designers, for sure. You know his website address? That's fine.
Sure,
I'll be sure that
you look up the book. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And you can find me, my website is www.markpsadler.com. And if you want an autograph copy, you can get a hold of me there. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, all the usual social media places. Love to hear from anybody.
Awesome. And if you're not already following Mark everywhere, what are you waiting for? I don't understand. What are you waiting for? I talk about this person all the time. He's done reviews. I've worked with him at Suspense. Really, really, really good writer. I've reviewed the first book. I probably need to think about reviewing this one because he said chipper, and now I'm all excited. Anyway, so you guys get out there and follow this author. You're going to be remiss if you don't. The book is Kettle of Vultures. If you guys have read Kettle of Vultures, I would love to hear what you thought. And I know Mark would love to hear it as well. Shoot me an email, ckweb73@gmail.com, and let us know what you thought. I do want to point one more thing out to the readers and listeners out there, you guys. If you are looking at the book on Amazon, it not only is getting really, really great glowing reviews from verified purchases, you know how I feel about those are wonderful, it's getting really, really great reviews, but there are some immaculate cover blurbs here, you know, where other writers are coming in and saying, hey, you know, this is pretty great. So you guys check those out as well. And I'm pretty sure that your fans are going to start harassing you like pretty much daily for a sequel. So are you writing that yet, or have they chided you to it yet, or you got to get a few more emails?
Well, it's about, I'd say about two-thirds of the way to the first rough draft. So we're working on it.
Ask, and sometimes you actually might get what you ask for. So that's the great thing about having a favorite writer. Sometimes they listen to you. Well, I'm excited. I want to. You already know the door is always open for you here. So whatever cool thing happens with you, whenever you get ready to drop another book, Hollywood calls, you grab an agent. I don't care what thing it is that's awesome. Just shoot me an email. You know we'd love to get you back on the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
I have really enjoyed it, Mark. Thanks so much for coming on Webweaver Books, and it's really good to hear from you again. And best of everything with Kettle of Vultures.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
All right. Hey, you guys, get out there and pick up a copy of that book. I'm not kidding you. This guy can write. I mean, like, there's no tomorrow. I mean, straight up, like, there's no tomorrow. And, you know, that whole, you know, if you're looking for an agent here, and you know what, that stuff is totally irrelevant. It means that is all for naught at this point. I'm sorry, agents out there, but it's true. Sometimes they don't need you guys. And when you have a great author who sits down and writes an impeccably edited book with a kick-ass storyline, well, that kind of leaves y'all out of the loop. So I say the agent should be scouting for authors. It shouldn't be the other way around. But that's just me. What do I know? Anyways, you're the ones that want 15%, not me. So I say you guys get out there and pick up a copy of this book and let Mr. Sadler here fund his own endeavors. And let's keep reading these books and leave that other guy out of the equation. And let's get all the money in Mark's pocket so we can keep him writing these books, you guys. Come on, you know. Get out there and pick up a copy of Kettle of Vultures. Now, listen, you guys, there's a really great updated author website on Amazon, and I can't emphasize enough to you guys, please click follow on your authors. When you are signed into Amazon, it's a split second. I can't even say it takes you a second. However long it takes you to click, literally, like I could probably click, I don't know, 10 times in 1 second. So I think you can do that. Follow the author, and, you know, you're going to get – I really love that Amazon is doing this, and you're going to get a little feedback from them as well. They're going to send those emails out once a week and say, hey, you know, that author that you love so much has another book coming out. And so this is a really great way for you to keep up with new authors or authors that you've been following for years. And it's definitely a great way for you to keep up with Mark P. Sadler's Kettle of Vultures. You guys go check him out, follow him, and pick up a copy of his other book as well. It is very, very, very good. It's called Blood on Sand, so go check it out. I'm quite fond of him, and I think you guys will be as well. All right, you guys, I'm going to get out of here, but first things first, I want to let you know that we are going to be on tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central. You guys, please tune in with me. We'll be on with author John Hyde, who will be talking about and reading from his latest novel. So you guys tune in tomorrow at 11. I guess that's it. I'm CK Webb. Thanking you guys for stopping into Web Weaver Books, where our favorite authors read their books for you. And clothing, yep, it's 100% optional. All you naked people out there.
Near Civil War history, my heart, if they beat, she was standing.